This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the On the Media Midweek Podcast. I'm Brandi Zadrozny, sitting in for Brooke Gladstone. On July 7th, Haiti's president Jovenel Moïse was assassinated in his home.
The horror in Haiti. The first lady also shot.
Authorities in Haiti said the assassins were foreign mercenaries who had posed as U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration agents in the raid on his home.
The question of who is behind the assassination is still an open one, but Moïse had his share of enemies.
For the last 18 months, the 53-year-old had been ruling the country by decree, without parliament. The opposition accused him of corruption and ties to organized crime.
In the wake of Moïse's assassination, international media coverage followed a time-worn template to describe events in the island nation, emphasizing instability.
Haiti has been in more than its usual share of chaos recently.
Haiti is a country in chaos, where acts of everyday life have come to pose a mortal risk.
And violence.
Life in Haiti seems to have returned to normal, but the normal Haitians are used to is violence.
It's a pattern with old roots.
Here's Port-au-Prince, Haiti in 1915, chief city of an island nation torn by internal troubles. United States Marines land in Haiti to battle Haitian bandits threatening destruction of American properties. And native bandits quickly...
Time and again, after a coup, an earthquake, an assassination, the world's first black republic is flattened into a narrative of perpetual chaos. Haitians turned into desperate victims in need of generous international aid.
We're their largest donor in terms of assistance of all kinds. Spare a thought for our brothers and sisters in Haiti tonight. They are really staring into the abyss right now. Haiti, of course, an absolutely beleaguered country.
Natalie Seurat, co-founder and lead editor of Woy magazine, a Haitian online media project, says this trend removes essential context.
And so Haitians have been sounding the alarm about the culture of violence that has been allowed to reign under this current regime and how dispensable life has become and how unacceptable people's quality of life have become, that massacres have become commonplace.
Seurat is referring to the anti-corruption pro-democracy movements that had been mobilizing against Moïse since shortly after he came to power. Among other things, calling for accountability after a $2 billion fund earmarked to build Haitian infrastructure and social programs disappeared into thin air under Moïse's watch. Protests peaked this February when Moïse refused to step down at the end of his term. But, Seurat says, these pro-democracy protests didn't make international headlines in the way that similar protests in Hong Kong or Cuba did, and they didn't get the political attention either.
It's not politically convenient for the United States to make a story of these movements because the United States government has bipartisan support of this current regime. These guys were basically handpicked by the U.S. government.
In fact, Haiti's history is marked by U.S. invasion, occupation, and election meddling. And as of last month, the meddling continues.
In the wake of Moïse's assassination on July the 7th, a core group of foreign nations backed Ariel Henry to take the reins as Haiti's new prime minister.
And so, a cycle. Whenever a Haitian crisis pops up on our radar, TV pundits rush to play catch-up. Here's Conan O'Brien mocking the practice on his show in 2018.
To understand today's Haiti, you need to know its history. This should only take a minute and 23 seconds.
Indeed, it's much easier to reduce Haiti to a soundbite. You've no doubt heard it before as a phrase so ubiquitous, the poet Jean-Claude Martineau calls it Haiti's famous last name.
Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
It is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
It means it's black. It is incapable of self-governance.
Gina Athena Ulisse is a professor of feminist studies at UC Santa Cruz and the author of Why Haiti Needs New Narratives.
It takes Haiti and places it in its own category, right? So what is happening in Haiti is unlike anything that's happening anywhere else in the world. When we hear Haiti is the quote-unquote poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere, it tells us absolutely nothing. It doesn't tell us, for example, that there's extreme wealth there. It doesn't tell us that there's a class system, a very entrenched class system there. It doesn't tell us there are forces that have developed to render what was once the most profitable colony in the Caribbean to become the quote-unquote poorest nation in the Western Hemisphere.
What are the things that should be well known about Haiti before we seek to tell, you know, the recent story of tragedy or unrest?
Haiti paid a big price in the aftermath of the Haitian Revolution. Haiti conquered three major European armies, declared itself a sovereign country. And one of the first things that was written in the Haitian Constitution is that any person that lands in Haiti who is Black will be free. At a time when the rest of the world was engaged in slavery, was benefiting from slavery. So Haiti was isolated as a result of that. Part of that history is understanding the impact that the American occupation, for example, has had on Haiti from 1915 to 1934. And it was the American government that actually instituted the Haitian police. In the late 60s and 70s, the United States supported the dictatorship. I actually want to stay away from thinking about these big historical moments, because I think there's a way when we talk about Haiti, we focus on what has become a brief timeline of Haiti, and here are the key moments we need to pay attention to. They tend to be moments of quote-unquote upheaval.
You're saying that we cherry pick, or maybe I suppose tragedy pick, the news out of Haiti. We only turn our lens to the country when there's violence or suffering or a crisis going on, and that in turn distorts how we view those events. You're a writer, and I was really interested in the appetite for Haiti stories.
I pitched a story, and somebody said to me, oh, no, we don't have time for this right now. Why don't you just come back? The next time there's a crisis, we can get you to do something else. I was like, wow. Clearly, this person is not going to be interested in a non-crisis story. It erases the humans who are living with this. They're seen as super resilient, right? Or the fact that, oh, well, they're Haitians, they're used to violence. Actually, no, they're not.
In your book, you refer to a particularly salient moment in Haitian earthquake coverage that happened on CNN. Can you describe that?
That was a painful moment when Anderson Cooper was interviewing Ben Hall.
I mean, one of the ladies that I met today, she said her five-year-old and one-and-a-half-year-old were crushed by the building when she was away. And when I asked her, well, did you have time to bury her before you're leaving? And she simply says, jete. I threw them away.
She said she threw her kids away.
She just tossed her kids away. I said, why don't you Haitians cry? She said, there's no point. They're dead already. Yeah. That's over and done with.
I think there's been generations of suffering on this island. And we know there have, you know, from dictatorships and killings at night and people who have no power really have absolutely no power. And there's this kind of resignation almost at times of people just kind of throw up their shoulders and say, you know what, this is the way it's always been.
And I think that's part of this, the explanation. I can't believe that's the whole part of the situation. Mm. Can you imagine a mother saying in any culture, I threw them away?
Yeah. How could you not recognize that something this unbelievable, this shocking, right? It was a few seconds and the entire world changed. Someone is traumatized, but you describe them as non-human. And if you're Black, you know your humanity is always in question.
Well, you've written really beautifully that Haitians are, and I'm quoting you, portrayed historically as fractures, as fragments, bodies without minds, heads without bodies, or roving spirits. So when the media needs quotes or analysis, who is speaking for them?
The experts are usually white men or white women here and there. And then the voice of experience is the Haitian, as though Haitians themselves are not capable of analysis. Guess what? They can speak for themselves. Haiti has new narratives, but no one is actually listening to what people in Haiti are saying, because the voices in Haiti that have always mattered are the voices of the rich, are the voices of the people who are able to pay lobbyists and the people considered to be the more capable ones. No one wants to hear from a quote-unquote peasant or grassroots organization.
In American media, the U.S. is sometimes portrayed as a benevolent and concerned neighbor who is trying to find ways to help in Haiti, often through political or military intervention.
The U.S. military being greeted by shouts of joy. The people there thought the U.S. government had come to take over, and they were really happy about it. Martha Raddatz described it as a "please occupy us" atmosphere.
President Biden answers Haiti's call for help, sending in a team to assess the political instability that is on the brink of humanitarian crisis.
What do you make of that framing?
The perception is Haiti always needs intervention. It's almost like Haiti's a U.S. protectorate. Under President Obama, Haiti's sovereignty was continually undermined. The same way the United States government and core group is pushing for elections now, they had pushed for and assured elections were held in Haiti in the aftermath of the earthquake, when Haitians were saying it's absolutely impossible. And what ended up happening back then is what Haitians call not an election, a selection, because the infamous Michel Martelly was selected to become president of Haiti.
All the main opposition candidates denouncing fraud during Sunday's vote.
International election monitors in Haiti say that Sunday's general election was valid despite what they called serious irregularities.
It is a great pleasure and an honor for me to welcome the president-elect to the State Department.
And the fact that there's been this kleptocratic, corruptive government in place who actually go by quote-unquote legal bandits, that's what they call themselves, why I give the Biden administration a big F, is that they upheld Moïse. Who gets to decide what Haitians should live with? Why is that decision outside of the hands of the actual masses of people? Why is it it's international communities that are making these decisions?
The assassination was followed by several outlets, including the Washington Post, calling for U.S. intervention. I think the quote was boots on the ground, claiming that they've historically brought some stability to Haiti. But you're saying that's not true.
No, it's not. There's an economics to interventions. When people say, for example, that Haitians squandered $13 billion in aid, well, your average Haitian did not get a check. The money did not go to people. It went to organizations. It went to the NGOs, mostly foreign-led. Did we forget that that was a complete disaster? Haitian people at the grassroots level and were saying, absolutely not. We do not need the boots on the ground.
So what are the Haiti stories that we're not hearing?
There are people in Haiti who are committed to Haiti despite how harsh things have been. There's love in Haiti. People's commitment to one another, right? People get together and debate and try to think through and figure out what are the possible ways of engaging. We tend to not think about that. Like when we see people protest, for example, we see the opposition, but we don't see what is the inspiration.
Is there a path for the American media to actually cover Haitian news well and not just the tragedy and the violence?
We are living in a moment and in a world where class struggle is everywhere. When we're thinking about the gap between the rich and the poor and the entire world, there's been upheaval. So the ordinariness of that, I think, is something that we need to keep more in mind so that we don't continue to demonize Haiti and this narrative of hashtag turmoil. Just coming back to Haiti every time there's a moment is not the way to cover Haiti. Who's talking to the civil society groups right now after this dies down? What are they doing? That would be a fascinating story.
Professor Ulisse, thank you so much.
Well, thank you so much, Brandy.
Gina Athena Ulisse is a professor of feminist studies at UC Santa Cruz and author of Why Haiti Needs New Narratives. Join us for the big show this weekend, where we're going to look at the history of the vaccine regret trope we've been seeing all over the media lately. Also, an interview with Julie K. Brown, the intrepid reporter whose reporting helped put Jeffrey Epstein behind bars. See you then.